The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Listening to Books on the Flypod New Media Network. I'm your host, Stephen J. Lowenstein. Welcome to our program. We're pleased to have you listening in, and we do thank our syndication and hyper-syndication partners and underwriters. Without this active network of support, none of our programs would be possible. So, when you have a few minutes, visit our media site directly at www.theflypod.com. With our nationwide team of 35 individual show hosts, we podcast a wide variety of programs daily to thousands of small communities across the United States, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. My guest today is Cindy Driehouse, author of a beautiful book entitled Songs of the African Sun. Tell you a little bit about Cindy. She's a graduate of the University of Cincinnati. She has a number of degrees, a BA in communication, speech and theater, minored in Spanish, and believe it or not, creative writing. While at UC, she began writing at Clifton Magazine and the University of Cincinnati Mountaineering Club Magazine, Newsletter, and the Goosetown Gazette. Would you believe that she began her writing career at the age of 8? When she won a contest sponsored by the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. And she wrote a book entitled The Royal Adventures of Princess Darcy and Princess Daisy, a collection of original bedtime stories for her children, which was published by Orange Fraser Press in 2007. She does not have a formal background in photography, but I can tell you that's of little consequence since the book is beautifully illustrated. And Cindy, there are several factors I imagine that came together that made you want to write this book. Let's begin with what you spoke about on the back of your book, those dreams and the movies you saw as a child.
Well, one of my favorite books is Out of Africa. And love the book and the movie with Meryl Streep and Robert Redford back in the day. I don't know how many years ago that was. But when I saw that movie, and I'm not really sure how long ago that was, just absolutely fell in love with the landscape of Africa and honestly never dreamed in a million years I'd be going there. So it just wasn't in the plan. But, you know, if the opportunity ever presented itself, which it did in 2013, you know, I jumped on it.
Let's talk about that opportunity in 2013.
Well, probably the year before that, I had my brother-in-law, who is a former congressman in Ohio, Steve Driehouse. He accepted a position to go to Swaziland and South Africa, and the position offered to him was to be the Peace Corps director for the country of Swaziland. And it was a term he accepted and moved over there with his wife and his children and committed to 3 years in Swaziland to be the director.
The director of?
Of the Peace Corps.
Of the Peace Corps.
Right, for the entire country.
And he is still there now.
He's still there now. He's completed one term of 3 years and he's accepted a second term of 2 more years.
So did you go there with the intent of writing a book or?
Never. No, not. There was never any idea in my head that I was going to do a book when I got back. It was simply a trip. It really was. I invited from UC's Mountaineering Club, my good friends for over 30 years, Gene Venemeyer and John Engenbritzen. And we have traveled together quite a bit for the past 30 years. And I knew that they have had a lot of adventures traveling. They've been all over the world, but they had not yet been to Africa. And I knew that they were the two, that the three of us would make a great team of travel partners. So I invited them to go in the fall of 2012. And my husband gave me the go-ahead, you know, sure, go over there, have fun. I'm not going to go. I'm working. So we planned the trip ourselves. We were in touch with Steve. Steve gave us a lot of travel tips.
Such as?
The best rates for the plane ride and, you know, you don't want to spend more than this or less than this. And there are many ways to get to Africa. The most direct way is to fly to Atlanta, and daily they have a flight from Atlanta to Johannesburg, which is about 16 hours. So that was the one that we did. We got a very good price on it. So it was going to be a trip. We were going to definitely do safaris. We were going to spend time with Steve and his family. And my sister-in-law, Lucienne, is a wonderful hostess, and she did take us around quite a bit. So it was just going to be a trip for fun. There was never any intention of writing a book. I never dreamed that I would do that.
So that came about because you were what?
Well, it came about when I returned from the trip. So we were there for 2 weeks, and when I got home, I just had a little Canon digital that cost me probably $100 that I bought right before I went there, because like I had mentioned in my bio, I have no formal background or training in photography. So I bought $100 camera, and I thought, well, this will do. And on my 5 safaris and other tourist adventures, you know, I took a lot of pictures.
5 safaris?
5. We went on 5 different safari rides. And safari drives or rides are very common there. And Kruger Park is big. And even in Swaziland, which is smaller, you know, you can hire a guide for about $20 American.
For how long?
They'll take you out 2 to 3 hours.
Really?
And it's very, and you're allowed to drive into the park with just your own car. There's really no reason to do that with how accessible and, you know, reasonably priced the safari drives are. The people in Africa, they go to a safari academy for 2 years to become a guide. And they are very well trained. They know absolutely everything. After 2 years, they know about animal behavior, and they know every plant that there is, you know, on the safari plane, everything about the bird life and everything. And they're so knowledgeable, and you feel, I think, safer with them. And there's a lot of stories about tourists driving into Kruger Park on a safari of their own that got injured or hurt because they got too close to the animals. They don't understand animal behavior like the guides do.
Well, I would think not only that, you'd want to have someone with you knew where they were going.
Well, and it's
how to get out.
That's correct. It's very easy to get lost in a game reserve or in the plains because they're so vast and so enormous that when we went on these drives and they're just dirt roads, there's really no markings. You have a map if you can understand it, but there's really no markings. You have to know where you're going. So you might drive a half an hour just to get to the point where you want to start looking for animals, and the guides know where they're going.
To where they're going and where the animals are. So this was not a safari as pictured in the movies in the 30s and 40s with machetes and people carrying trunks on their back.
Well, they do have walking safaris. They do have walking safaris. And the walking safaris, I don't know that I'd be on the ground. I liked being in my Land Rover up pretty high, so I don't know that I'd be on the ground with a walking safari, but those are available as well.
I found your writing in your book, Songs of the African Sun, to have some very sharp concepts that were identified in a word or maybe two, not a phrase. To me, it was more like haiku would be if it had been developed for Twitter. Where did you learn to write in this style?
Well, I did do quite a bit of poetry writing with UC, although this is my very first work and, you know, any type of attempt at poetry writing. I will say that I kept a journal while I was there.
Okay.
And I would oftentimes, Steve lives in the mountains, and he has some beautiful gardens out in his backyard. When everybody else was kind of out, you know, doing different things, maybe my friends were napping in the afternoon, I would sit outside in his backyard and just jot down images. Again, never planning for a book or anything along those lines. It was strictly part of my journal, you know. Some of those pictures are, you know, taken from that vantage point.
I was going to ask you if there was a picture from his backyard.
Right, right. And so I just jotted down the images that were in my head. The name of the book actually kind of popped in my head on the plane ride on the way home. You know, wouldn't it be cool to kind of play around with some images? And this title just kept popping into my head over and over again. I don't know why. That's why it became the title of the book.
So it came afterward. Were you inspired to write when you took the picture, or did you have to think about it for a while, let it sink in, and then write?
Well, what I did is when I got home, I had hundreds of pictures, and they were so, like I said, I never in a million years thought I could take pictures that just revealed the landscape so vividly, and I was surprised that I could do that, and with this little inexpensive camera. I guess the disclaimer here is that it's almost impossible to take a bad picture over there, you know. So I got home and I looked at my hundreds of pictures, and I looked at my journal, and I said, I have to do something with these. I have to share these with the world, because people are going to want to learn about South Africa. It's not every day that you get to go there. So I actually selected, as time went along, my 10 favorite photographs. And those are the 10 that are in the book. And then I already had images in my journal about those 10, or, you know, close to, you know, some of the photographs in there. And I just, it really didn't take me long to write the poems. I sat down and grabbed the images from my journal and looked at each picture and wrote the poem from the picture. Each poem is actually the story of that picture.
Okay.
It's actually the story of that picture.
That's what I thought, because there's a photograph of a lion.
Yes, the lion is...
And you write, "The king circles the creature. Curious, there is a slight shift." What was going on?
Well, the morning that we saw the lion, and we only, you know, you go over there and people talk about the big five. I had never really heard that was the goal of people on safari, to see the big five. I didn't even know necessarily what the big five were. I knew that it included a lion. So the lion, we had seen one lion, but from a distance on another safari ride. The morning that we saw the lion, we were actually not in Kruger Park, which is where probably we were on three safaris in Kruger Park and two in Swaziland, because we were at a much smaller game reserve in Swaziland. The morning that we saw the lion, my two friends, we were having some car trouble. They opted not to go and to deal with the car trouble. We had already signed up and paid for the safari. So I went with just another couple who were tourists. So there were just four of us that morning. That was the smallest safari ride I ever went on, and the guide included. And he drove us out. We drove for a good 45 minutes. And then we ended up in this reserve where it was literally in the middle of nowhere, and it was us and the lion.
Were you having car trouble, or was that earlier?
No, we were having car trouble with our rental car.
Okay.
Oh, gosh, if it was with the Land Rover, I wouldn't have even gone.
Because when you talk about circling, and I'm going, oh.
No. The guide himself, when he spotted the lion, he turned the engine off.
Okay.
And we sat there for a good 10 minutes taking pictures and videos.
And so
the
lion came up to you.
The lion was very close. And I thought in my head, you know, I sure hope I make it back.
Was your heart pounding?
Yeah. And they kind of, the other couple, they were from South Africa. So they were kind of teasing me, because afterwards I said, oh my gosh, what is stopping that lion from just not having us for breakfast? He's 5 feet away. You know, he could just jump in here at any moment and we're his breakfast. But the lions there, any of the animals, there's no reason for them to attack people. Not to say that it would never happen, but they're so used to people coming and going, and they have strict poaching laws. There's nobody hunting them down or trying to shoot them or harm them. They just are very laid back. So he was alone. He saw our Jeep, and he just kind of looked at us, regarded us, and we stopped, turned the engine off. He did circle around us a few times, you know, not in a way that was threatening, but just kind of observing us as we were observing him. And then he laid down by the side of the road, which again was close to the Jeep. And yes, that's a zoom, you know, but in my picture,
okay. It
is a zoom, but he still was close. He wasn't that close, but he was still close.
Because looking at the picture, I went, That's close.
Yeah, no, he wasn't that close. That's a Zoom. But what happened is we were there for so long. Like, for him, that was 10 minutes. That was a long 10 minutes. And the thought did occur to me, what if the guide turns the ignition on the Land Rover and it doesn't start? And it's just us in the line. I did get a little nervous about that. I kept thinking of my four kids back home, and I sure hope I make it back. So, you know, and another thing that happens is the safari guides will school you in your behavior as you go out on a safari. Okay. You are never, ever, ever allowed to get out of the vehicle for any reason. They tell you just to really be quiet and respectful of the animal kingdom, not to make a lot of loud noises, not to be loud, not to put your hands and arms out of the vehicle, because from the lion's perspective and vantage point, they look at us. Okay, there might be anywhere from, you know, 2 to 6 people in the Land Rover. They look at us as one big giant creature, not individuals in the Jeep, but we're one big creature to him, and we're bigger than him. Okay, we're not bigger than an elephant, but we're bigger than the lion.
You're bigger than the lion.
Well, yeah, okay. The Land Rover is. So
oh,
they,
okay.
They
all
look
right,
at
all
us
right,
as
right.
We're just a bigger creature than him. So that's why they don't normally mess with us. But the minute they see arms and hands and feet out of the vehicle, they realize there are things in the vehicle, other creatures. So then it takes it back a notch where they realize they are bigger than us. So they don't want you doing a lot of flailing and a lot of moving. The people that I was with when we were watching that lion from South Africa were not behaving the way they should have, and they were sticking their cameras out of the side and taking pictures of him and flailing and moving around, and the guy didn't seem disturbed by it. I guess I was the only one that noticed because he was in the front and I was in the back. So ultimately, I think what happened is he got a little annoyed with us. We were invading his space, his territory. And after a while, it got to be old and he didn't want us there anymore. So he let out this huge roar, and it was startling because it was that, you know, that Lion King roar, that Mufasa roar. And we were like, oh my gosh. And the guide turned around and he looked at us. He very slowly started the ignition to turn the car on again. And he said, it's time for us to go. He's letting us know. It's time for us to leave. And we very slowly drove past him. I mean, he was just right there next to us on the road. We very slowly drove past him. So that is what actually happened to us at that very close encounter with the lion.
I don't know a lot about photography other than I know a good picture when I see it. But something struck me as I looked at these photographs, and it was the lighting. It seems to me that it seemed brighter, the natural lighting I'm talking about, than any other place I've seen pictures of. It just seems like the sunlight there is a few lumens higher. Were you struck by that?
Yeah, it's fascinating. We went on our safari rides at all different times of the day in terms of the sunlight. We did at 5 a.m., you know, we go out in the pitch black, and it's actually very chilly out first thing in the morning. And that's a fascinating ride. We probably did 3 of those because the animals are just waking up. And so in the warmer weather, like, for instance, the rhinoceros will sleep in the dirt road, and you pull up, and you actually have to wait for them to wake up and move off the dirt road so you can keep driving.
Yes.
So you're seeing the sun come up. The cover photo is one of those morning safari rides, and you see the sun coming up there. In no time at all, the sun is very bright, and it is, the light is bright, and it just seems amazing how it lights up the plains. Yeah, I felt like the whole time I was there, it was kind of like the Lion King comes to life, you know.
You plan on going back?
I really would love to. I really
would.
You
write another book?
Well, I have plans for other books. Yes.
What are they? Well, before you do that, tell us where we can get a copy of Songs of the African Sun.
Well, the publisher is Author House, and so their website is just authorhouse.com.
Authorhouse.com.
Authorhouse.com. All one word, www.authorhouse.com. And the book is $17.99 for a soft cover. There is an ebook available, I believe. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe it might be $4.99. for an ebook. It's available in ebook as well. You'll see that on the website. So if you just Google my name or Songs of the African Sun on Author House, you can buy the book. It's also available on Amazon. It's also available at Barnes & Noble online, some of the larger distributors of books. And you can get it from me. When I go out for a book signing, I will have, you know, quite a few copies available for sale.
So what's your next book going to be about? I'm interested because I liked your writing style.
Well, thank you. You know, I would love to do another travel book. You know, would like to have another travel adventure so I can write a book. Actually looking to start a career in travel right now. I have never been an employee of the travel industry, but that's my goal right now. I actually have some things in the works. My husband said, traveling is your number one hobby and thing. You have 18 years in sales, and now you've written a book about traveling. Why don't you just go work in the travel business? And that was his suggestion. So I'm actually looking into that right now. My next project for a book is something that I've had since I did my first book about the princess stories. I want to write another series of children's books. Yeah, I actually have a character in mind that I've already created. The books will have, I don't know if you're familiar with children's books, but the Frog and Toad series were the story of a friendship of a frog and a toad, and they had four books, and each book had a different story and a different message or moral in those four very short books with really cute illustrations. My book will be about a character, a little boy, and I'll probably write probably four short books, but each book will have this character engaged in something like a moral lesson or something ethically that you can learn from him. You know, like how when you're faced with the possibility of cheating at school, for instance, or you find money on the ground when you're fishing in the lake in your neighborhood, do you return the money or do you keep it? So honesty.
Very good.
So each of the four books with this one character that people will get to know is going to have a moral.
Well, Cindy, I want to thank you for coming on my show, speaking with me about your book and some of your unique life experiences. Listeners, we're interested in what you think of today's program. You could either leave a public comment on the listener page for the show, which is likely displayed at the front of you at this very moment, or you can email us in our main production studio, shout@theflypod.com. Again, my guest today has been Cindy Driehaus, author with some very interesting experiences with her latest book, Songs of the African Sun. I'm your host, Stephen J. Lowenstein, coming to you free and clear through the New Media Network program feeds of theflypod.com. If you have any comments, suggestions, or questions, let us hear from you. Until next time, thank you so much for joining us. And remember, when it comes to the media, we are what's next.